time now for your letters. Several of you wrote about our story on the Smithsonian's decision to strip captions from photos taken in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Susanna Slavik, head of the Carnegie Mellon School of Art in Pittsburgh, writes, "I listened with dismay. One senator praised the Smithsonian for resisting co-optation for political purposes. How gullible does he think we are? The resulting anemic presentation of Subhankar Banerjee's photographs embodied just that. Political interference and manipulation. Shame on the Smithsonian," she writes, "and even more, shame on the politicians who exerted pressure on an institution that should honor Americans' capacity to think for themselves. No secret police invaded the galleries, nor were laws of censorship applied, but the result was one we might expect from a totalitarian government, not one built on freedom of expression."
Our story about a scientific review of the Atkins diet prompted Andrew Lieberman of Simsbury, Connecticut, to write that he, too, is dismayed by our inclusion of Dr. Dean Ornish in that report. He writes, "You owed your listeners the information that Dr. Ornish is a prolific writer of books on dieting and must be considered a competitor of the late Dr. Atkins for the lucrative diet book market. His contempt of Dr. Atkins' theories must be viewed in that light."
More dismay, this time from David Schmidt of Heartland, Wisconsin, who writes he was surprised and sorry to hear our story about the French attempt to ply U.S. travel writers with French food and wine. Mr. Schmidt writes, "The bite of the war has not left Middle America just yet. This past week, the latest U.S. casualty was a Marine from a small Wisconsin community who gave his life trying to rescue other soldiers in a helicopter accident. I personally think it is too soon to move on. I think your article was disrespectful to the women, men, and families who have paid the ultimate cost for our liberties. France and her people may soon again forget the cost of freedom, since they paid nothing for it. I hope it takes more than a little wine and pâté for the rest of us to forget the efforts of those who paid so much."
A different view from Andres Zervagan of Laverne, California, who says, "Not everyone in this country found Chirac's resistance to the American war in Iraq distasteful. In fact, I and many others I know welcomed it wholeheartedly. When the Democratic opposition falls irresponsibly silent in this land, I take great heart knowing that at least some elected leaders elsewhere have the courage to voice my opinions. I can't wait to visit France this summer, and until then, I'll satisfy myself with the Republic's fantastic cheese, wine, and art. Vive la différence!"
Finally, our story about Chevron Texaco's decision to stop sponsoring Metropolitan Opera broadcasts prompted these reminiscences from Sharon Christensen of Tallahassee, Florida. She writes, "I grew up with Texaco and opera. I attended a private Catholic grade school in Sonoma, California. I remember that every Friday afternoon, the eighth grade class would listen to the Texaco Opera Hour during our quiet time. That was my introduction to opera on the radio. The eighth grade class trip was not to just any place, it was to the city, San Francisco, to see a live performance of an opera, Madame Butterfly. What a joy it was for me to see a performance of the music I had been listening to all year in class. That was over 40 years ago. Thank you to all who are involved in making opera available to everyone who has a radio."
And thanks to everyone for writing. Our email address is atc@npr.org. And please don't forget to let us know where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.